and welcome to the very first episode of We Have a Technical, the official iDieYouDie.com podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy.
And I'm Bruce Lord.
And we're joined here in the iDieYouDie HQ with intern Toby. This is something that we've wanted to do for quite some time. In fact, even before we started iDieYouDie.com, we had discussed doing a podcast.
Yeah, the whole idea behind the website was kind of born out of us just sitting around chewing the fat, talking about records to begin with. And so when we started talking about doing the blog, we decided that, oh, sure, you know, recording that would be a big part of the site. We never really got around to that, though. We didn't have a microphone and we didn't have the initiative. The little series of mixtapes that we've been doing, the So Fragile mixtape series, has been doing okay. So that's what's been put up there in the podcast section thus far. But yeah, we finally decided to get around to recording one of these things, and we're calling it We Have a Technical, in keeping with the very Gary Newman themed of pretty much everything on the website and all of the features. So we're happy to be doing this.
So yeah, basically, as Bruce kind of alluded to there, iDieYouDie has really always been like kind of an extension of our friendship, like, which is us sitting around drinking beer and talking about records, which is kind of like the whole basis of our friendship.
It's how we got to know each other. It's how we started DJing with each other. And it's definitely the reason why the blog has been able to stick together for as long as it has.
Yeah, mostly just because, I mean, in as much as I sort of feel like we kind of hit a good groove really early on, because we had done a couple of blogs before this. We had Inner Ear Infection and Deaf in June, which were both a lot of fun when we were doing them, but we couldn't really maintain. You were in grad school at the time. I was getting drunk out behind the 7-Eleven. I don't know. So some worthwhile excuse. But yeah, those never really stuck together until we started doing I Die, You Die. But, you know, this has always been sort of one of those things that we've had in our back pocket. It's just like, yeah, we got to get around to recording a podcast. We really got to get around to doing that. And, of course, there's some things that, you know, as much as we enjoy the writing part of it and doing interviews that way, you know, this is sort of one of those things that would allow us to do a lot more conversational stuff. You know, even with our in-conversation pieces, we've kind of tried to do that sort of thing. But, you know, there's something about the ebb and flow of a conversation on a podcast. Like, I know you listen to a lot of baseball podcasts.
Yeah, I'm really hoping I can keep, I don't worry about, like, the personality or style of any of those, the influence of those podcasts seeping through, but I swear to God I will try to keep the actual baseball talk to a minimum on this, because I know outside of, you know, John down in Los Angeles, there's like nobody listening to this who really gives a rat's ass about baseball. So I'll try to keep that to a minimum. But we both listen to a lot of podcasts and everything. We both enjoy the format and are interested in it. And we think it should be a pretty fun dimension to add to the site.
That said, it also seems like it's going to be a lot easier than us like writing something big every week. Because lately we've really been chipping on things like, oh god, we got to come up with a feature.
Features have been few and far between because we've been slacking on interviews. If we have tentative interview arrangements with you and you're an artist listening to this, we're sorry. We hope to get that squared away sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, you get to hear us rambling.
Yeah, so speaking of rambling, we've done a fair bit of that so far. So the takeaway from all this should be that this is basically going to be like reading I Die, You Die, except probably with more tangents and more Aquid references, and possibly more talk about professional wrestling from the 1990s.
Yeah.
Since we just had like a 3-hour long conversation about that while we were eating dinner, getting ready to do this. So hopefully that's out of our systems. So format-wise, we decided that we want to do a thing where we talk about some upcoming records, but we also want to talk about a record that we're currently enjoying and also a record from the past. This is a very loose format. We might play around with it a little bit. We might abandon it entirely after this first one, but this is kind of what we decided to do for the first one. So we're going to be kicking it off with a track from the Mr. Kitty record that we're enjoying so much that just came out on Engraved Ritual, one that took us both a little bit by surprise. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it, but here's a track from it right now.
We'll be right back.
All right, that was Choke by Mr. Kitty from his new album, which is called Life. It's out now on Engraved Ritual. We were actually just going through the discography. Forrest Carney, which is Mr. Kitty's real name, is kind of one of those interesting internet artists in that I don't know that he even has, like, a physical album that's been out before this. I know that when I first heard about him, there was, like, 50 things on Bandcamp. And I remember going through them trying to figure out, okay, I think this one's like an LP, this one seems to be remixes, this has covers and stuff like that, but of all of them, you know, it's sort of hard to divine his discography. He's also one of those internet-based artists where our usual solution of just going to Discogs and seeing what's on there isn't really useful, because Discogs isn't good at tracking, like, net-only releases.
Yeah, no, I do remember seeing that Death, his first LP, I think, saw a physical release of some variety. I don't remember if it was a CD or LP, or if it was on a label or self-released or not, but I think there were some hard copies of that floating around. But yeah, once we got caught wind of him, we went to Bandcamp and just pretty much bought everything that he had and kind of started immersing ourselves in that, just kind of in time to be caught up when the new record came by. And it seems to it's a big step up. In my opinion, as far as both in album craft and song craft, it's a lot tighter. Not to say that the songs were ever lacking before, but they feel a lot more distinct this time around. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was also kind of interesting in that I remember for a little while there, we were hearing about him everywhere. Like, it would just be one of those things where I'd go on Facebook or whatever, and, you know, you'd see somebody who had just, like, discovered him probably in the same way that we had, just going like, holy crap, Mr. Kitty is amazing, check out these new things on his EP, which was that the, what was the name of the EP that preceded this?
That would have been...
It's the one that a bunch of the songs on Life come from.
Emotional/Physical.
Yes, Emotional/Physical, which had that the great cover image of him with, like, the skull.
Yeah, kind of the skull
painted on and the hoodie.
What's the punk kid from Montreal with the kind of the skull tattoos.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw him in a movie trailer, but that's neither here nor there. but yeah, like, I remember when I was in Sheffield back at Resistance back in March, I remember, like, Vlad McNeely, who you may know as just a fellow about the scene, does a lot of cover art for a lot of people, coming up to me after we'd been introduced by Alex from Black Ops and just being like, have you guys checked out Mr. Kitty? That guy is amazing. Me being like, yeah, we just discovered him too. It just sort of one of those weird little perfect storm things. And what's especially great about that sort of thing is when he comes through and puts out this really great record. And especially a really great record where, at first, you know, I remember enjoying it, but as I've been listening to it over the course of this summer, it's really, like, taken off and become this, you know, big record for me to listen to a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's become a real regular part of the diet around my house as well. Just to finish off what you were saying about kind of everybody getting into it, the cool thing, building on that, it's been people from a pretty wide range of scenes who've been talking it up. You know, it's not just people from Europe or not just people from Chicago, but it seems like a lot of different people from different areas and different kind of musical backgrounds are all on board with it. One point I wanted to throw out for conversation, Forrest is pretty young compared to a couple of old bastards like us, and it's interesting to think about how his own kind of, well, not only his, but kind of his generation's musical history might inform kind of the revisitation or the discovery of kind of classic synth pop sounds that are so present on the record, as you can hear. I mean, I know that my own kind of discovery of, you know, older 80s music, whether it was synth pop or post punk or whatever, was, you know, obviously going to be informed by and filtered through what was around me at the time, the current musical atmosphere that was around me at the time. And it seems interesting and maybe important, I don't know, that you know, younger generations who weren't even alive when kind of your OMDs, your Human Leagues and whatnot were on the radio are now discovering that music, and to kind of maybe think about what sort of filters or what sort of music that they're listening to that they've grown up with that might be affecting how they listen to those classic records.
Yeah, I mean, contextually, I'm sure he approaches that stuff really differently than you or I do, and probably, you know, a lot of other people. I mean, synth pop is old now. Like, all the guys who were making synth pop in, like, the early 80s, those guys are ancient, man. Like, have you seen a picture of John Fox recently?
Yeah.
Or any of those cats? I mean, and that's certainly not, you know, a value judgment against them, and I mean, they're all, many of them still very relevant. OMD put out a really good record last year, all kinds of fantastic stuff like that. But it's sort of almost, you know, the idea of I'm very curious where a guy like Mr. Kitty approaches that music, both the classic music, but also perhaps through the lens of a lot of contemporary stuff that's drawn influence from it. Like, you know, last year we certainly had things like Trust got really big, mm-hmm. You know, and I think that Trust sort of has a weird sideways glance at that kind of material, as well as, you know, some industrial and maybe a little bit of EBM even. You know, it's very interesting for me to look at that sort of, because his stuff is, to me, very, and by his stuff, I mean Mr. Kitty, his stuff is very classically synth-pop in a lot of ways. He has this very emotional, like, super emotional, super, like, angsty, but in a way that I find really appealing approach on all of his material. Like, I think when I reviewed it for the blog, I called it, like, teen angst goth pop, which is sort of the way I've always felt about it. And as weird as it feels to be, like, a 34-year-old man and, like, listening to this music and being like, yeah, man, life's rough, like, relationships, man. You know, now when I'm, you know, happy, stable relationship. Yeah. Good job. Life is easy.
I don't want albums that sound like this being made by people like us, you know, yeah, exactly. by people who are our age, you know. This is, yeah, it's unaffected, it's direct, it's, you know, it's emotional, it's not remotely jaded in any sort of way. And again, you know, not trying to infantilize the poor guy or anything like that, but it just has a real, you know, clear honesty to it that, it's just really refreshing, you know, for people who have spent so much time listening to this sort of music. I mean, it's cool to see that there's obviously something about those original records, that original sound, that still resonates with, you know, kids today. Not that we have any idea what kids today are listening to anymore.
Yeah, God only knows.
Yeah. No, we're far beyond our ken now. But it's nice to know that records like that are still being listened to, I guess.
Yeah. I guess one of the huge things for me listening to it as well, I mean, beyond just sort of like, it has this very direct, very kind of dark and very emotional feel that I really like about it. And as you said, it feels very genuine. It feels like it comes from a very honest place. That I think, you know, really resonates with anybody who was ever a teenager, which I guess is everybody, but certainly anybody who sort of had that North American teen angst experience, and probably European as well. I can't certainly speak for many other places in the world. Is that the songwriting on this record is stellar. Like, I think I remember sending you a text just after we got our download of it from the label and just being like, I don't think there's a bad song on this record. Yeah. And I still don't. Like, there's songs that I like more than others. Like, certainly that song Choke is sort of my favorite. I really like the first song Insects a lot. Mm-hmm. I think Heaven, which was sort of the pre-release leak single, was really stellar. But every single song on it, like, there doesn't feel like there's a lot of filler. And it's a deep album. It's like 16 tracks.
That was, his Death was a pretty lengthy record as well, and it was a good record. I, you know, DJed a couple of tracks from that on the regular a fair bit, but there was a bit, you know, a few of the tracks just kind of blended together a little bit and felt a little bit indistinct, but yeah, no, this is really has been proven to be a solid end-to-end listen. It's a great album. It functions excellently as an album, which, you know, as long as we're kind of waxing nostalgic and talking about kids these days and everything like that, it's good to know that, you know, album craft is still, you know, something that's being taken seriously.
Well, I mean, especially for an artist like him as well, who's done a lot of just, like, you know, web-only EPs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of lament the fact oftentimes that it works really well for some artists. You know, Kite only puts out EPs, and there's a bunch of people who are just like, I finished a good song, it's now on Bandcamp for you to download.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with that because I like just, you know, the ebb and flow of that a lot.
And in the case of Kite, it means just absolute pure quality control. You get one EP every 2 years and all four songs are going to be amazing.
Yeah, exactly. But it's nice to see somebody who does that but can also just slap together a fantastic record. I guess one of the other big things in listening to it, aside from the fact that the songs are really good, it's got that great emotional feel that we both really enjoy, is that instrumentation-wise, I feel like he really has a good sense of what he's working with. And what I mean by that is his palette isn't super wide-ranging. Like, a lot of his synth sounds, and I'm not a tech guy by any means. Like, I can sort of pick out, you know, certain synth patches and things like that, but I'm not the kind of person who'll be able to go like, oh, that's this synth here, or that drum machine, or that sample from this, or what have you. You know, I can't do that stuff at all. but I do sort of identify the fact that it seems like he's working within a certain limited palette of sounds and manages to get a lot out of them, and they're almost very transparent, which is one of those interesting things I find with especially synth-pop music production, is that so much of it is stylistic, and especially stuff where there's a throwback element, where it's like, oh yeah, you can tell that they're really going for that, you know, old-school analog sound, or like, this is trying really hard to sound, you know, kind of that sort of rubbery modular-type sound that's really popular right now. Whereas I feel like if I listen really hard to his songs, they all have they're distinct from one another, but they all use the similar sounds, but at the same time, too, I don't really notice that unless I'm looking for it. There's a nice transparency to the way he uses all those sounds as well.
And that definitely helps with, I'd say, the album cohesion element of it as well. And, I mean, then the big name that comes to mind when I hear you say that is, of course, Gary Numan. I mean, all, you know, like, think about it, like, Replicas, Pleasure Principle, Telecon, all of those albums, each of the individual songs on there have almost identical, like, okay, that's the way the bass sounds. This is one of, like, three synth voices that you are going to hear. Here's the way the drums are mixed. Gary does two different things with his voice. That's, you know, it's a very, it has, those albums have a very limited individual palette to work from, but, you know, the songs are amazing. The mood, the kind of the world that each of those albums create is immediate, and it's immediate. It hooks into you and everything like that, and it creates a space. You know, it's not overproduced. It's not, you know, it hasn't, and again, you know, not that that's, we love overproduction, you know, but it hasn't been, you know, totally, you know, agonized over, and that's not the way that a record like this should sound. If we're talking about it kind of being this kind of like instant, pure kind of like photograph of, you know, youthful emotion and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I also get a lot of visual stuff from it, and, you know, in as much as I sort of really hate the cliche of like, oh, it's a soundtrack to a movie that doesn't exist, because I think it's a really hacky thing to say, and especially to write, take note, you will never hear me say that or write it in a review ever. But it made me think of things like Donnie Darko and A Black Hole, the comic by Chester Brown. Charles Burns. Comic geeks, don't send me angry emails. I'm one of you. It reminds me so much of that stuff because it captures just that super dark, super almost stylized, but just the bleakness of teenagerdom and when everything seems really like tragic and important. Mm. Once again, we don't know how old Forrest is. For all I know, he's like 30.
No, he's not. Yeah, I know for a fact he's not. But
yeah, one way or the other, the point is that whether or not he's even aware of it, that's what comes across to me super well in it. And of course, we're looking at it through the lens of our lives and perhaps with some sort of nostalgic goggles on. But I haven't really talked to a lot of other people who've listened to it, and not a lot of the other reviews I've read have really focused on that aspect of me, but that's sort of what I imagine in my head is just the soundtrack to this ultra-dramatic, just sort of goth teenager, almost like suburban experience that, you know, you and I both sort of have.
And which we really loved M83's Saturdays Equals Youth. As well. That's kind of maybe a nice touch point. But again, yeah, like you say, this is just, you know, our own personal... Again, we, you know, I'm talking about like, oh, personal histories of, you know, more recent pop music informing the album, and of course our own personal histories with, you know, movies, comics, whatever we grew up with are informing our take on it as well. I mean, God only knows what flipping internet C-punk kids are getting out of when they listen to this record.
Yeah, Toby seems to like it, but, you know, he's
Running right up on the microphone.
Intern Toby, ladies and gentlemen. So yeah, I mean, it's been a big part of what we've sort of jokingly referred to a couple times as the summer of synth pop.
Yeah.
Because between the Kite EP that came out, Kite 5, which is really fantastic.
Oh, so good.
If you're not familiar with Kite, they're a Swedish electro-pop group, synth pop group, however you want to call it, who are on Progress Productions. They've been putting out EPs fairly regularly, as Bruce alluded to earlier, and only EPs, like, to the point where I kind of wondered, because I know that they tour and play concerts, that how they could have done that up till now, because they only had, like, between 12 and 15 songs in their whole catalog up till this point.
Something ridiculous.
Some ridiculous, though. But every single one of their songs is really good really awesome.
I can hum each and every one of them for you right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's been really fantastic, been in regular rotation. The Marchaux album, Marshall are a Greek synth-pop duo that we really like. They put out a couple records on Out of Line and have had a couple other records on some Greek label, the name of which I can't remember. But they just put out a new record called Inhale. And Inhale is, I was a bit let down by it. I know you like it a bit more than I do.
Yeah. I found myself playing it an awful lot, kind of around at house parties and everything like that. It just has this very, you know, kind of summery, warm, kind of exuberant, very breathy, very fun, pleasant record. There's a couple of tracks. There's like two tracks on it I don't like. There's one that totally sounds like Ladytron and one that totally sounds like Goldfrapp. I could do without those.
Yeah, both of those I thought were kind of weak.
But the rest of it's pretty damn good to me. Between those records, the Kite, the Mr. Kitty, the Marsho, and then the Syrian record, which you've been liking.
Yeah, Syrian's awesome. They're a Italian. I guess they were sort of a future pop group up till this point. I wasn't super familiar with their catalog, except I knew a few of their songs and liked them okay.
They've been around for a while.
Yeah, they've been around for quite a few years now. But I remember Marco from XP8, Marco with a C, not Marco with a K, saying, "You have to hear this Syrian record. It's going to blow your socks off." And me being like, okay, well, I'd be curious to hear what it sounds like. But I could not have been any more, like, surprised that this group, who I sort of, you know, more trancy sounds than their previous stuff, have gone and just made, like, an electropop record with lots of nods to, like, Italo and, like, Outrun Electro, and, oh, man, it's so good. Like, it just feels like all the songs have lots of orchestra hits and crazy, like,
lots of orc hits.
Yeah, tons of orchestra hits. But I'm super into that. Like, all I want to do is drive around in, like, an 80s sports car listening to that record with gullwing doors. Just, like, that is literally all I've wanted to do all summer. I've listened to it while reading. I've listened to it while playing video games. It's been a real soundtrack record for me. So, yeah, Syrian, Marsho, Kite, Mr. Kitty, different records all, but all with that same sort of synth poppy vibe. So it's been a fantastic summer for that, which sort of segues into our next bit, because we wanted to talk a little bit about some past records in that vein.
Yeah, we're going to pick up kind of a record that we never got to talk to the first time, because I don't think we were even, I can't remember if we were doing a, yeah, we would have been doing a blog at the time when it came out, but I don't think we ever wrote about it or talked about it, by a more recent synth-pop band as well, but kind of what I think is a bit of an underappreciated gem in their catalog, so we'll be getting to that in just a moment, but we'll segue out with another track from Life by Mr. Kitty.
Yep, this one is Insects. I like this track a lot. It's good. right. So we're back, and we're going to talk a little bit about a band who I will eternally associate with the first Guitar Hero, Freeze Pop.
Yeah, that's I was going to bring up the Guitar Hero thing if you weren't. That's still probably going to be the first point of contact for a lot of our listeners who are not diehard synth pop fans. You may remember songs like, what was it, Ready to Rock, and
That's the only one I can remember.
There's Ready to Rock, and then Let's Talk More Rock. I can't remember which one is from Guitar Hero 1 and which one is from Guitar Hero 2.
Ready to Rock is from Guitar Hero 1.
Okay, it's kind of academic. Point being...
that would be the absolute worst thesis ever if we actually were academic. Where is the first place you heard this Freeze Pop song? Oh. Which acclaimed guitar video game?
Point being, Freeze Pop are a relatively long-running, I don't know, like about 10 years now, band from New England, I think from Massachusetts, who have put out about 3 or 4 records, I think 3 full lengths, before 2010's Imaginary Friends, and I'd always enjoyed them. I think I have pretty much all of their discography up until now and including now. And they've always put out really kind of fun, you know, peppy songs that are kind of high concept, you know, songs about like chess and bikes and science. And one particularly great song dedicated to the cutest little otter that ever...
Philippe
from Akewood. There's a fantastic... tribute to Philippe song that they did called Here Comes a Special Boy. Point being, they'd done a lot of kind of, you know, fun, bleepy, cute sort of songs, which I'd enjoyed a lot. But I didn't really... I'm not sure that they ever really kind of, you know, hit a full... You know, delivered a full album that was back to front, a solid listen, that kind of, you know, brought everything in a synth-pop album could be to the fore. And I felt that Imaginary Friends really did a good job of that. There still are some kind of the, you know, kind of clever concept things. The kind of, you know, it's
well, like what?
One song's about you know, meeting a girl at like a girl meeting another girl at a club and kind of immediately picking up that her boyfriend's a dick and kind of like telling her, like trying to find a polite way of, you know, telling a recent acquaintance that your boyfriend's a dick and you should probably dump him. But then kind of like, you know, saying like, well, but then again, I just met you, so I know maybe you're a total waste anyway, but...
That's a complex concept to try and get across in a synth-pop song.
It is. There's that. There's kind of an extended metaphor about spiders, which is fine. And then there's, you know, another song, which I think we might be playing later, about just, you know, running into someone who looks way too much like you at a nightclub as well.
And that never happens to me.
It's, well, yeah, you looked in a mirror lately, dude. you guys have maybe seen a photo of Alex, but point, he's looking rather hirsute as of late, much to Klaus Larsson's delight, but that's a story for another day. Anyway, point being, the kind of the cute concept stuff that that Freeze Pop do really well is still in play in this record, but the arrangements are a lot more fleshed out, and there's kind of a more... I've kind of felt like they took the foot off the pedal as far as like really like insistent bleepy songs, and kind of adopted a bit... I wouldn't want to say melancholic, but a bit maybe more autumnal sort of tone to some of these. They're a bit more kind of like sing-songy sort of tracks and very whimsical. Almost romantic in a way, and they've really been working for me. It's like I said, the album came out in 2010, and it's kind of always been around in the back of my head ever since then. And I guess, I mean, you know, the whole rhythm game market collapsed, and so, and I don't know if Freeze Pop are still doing the, you know, kind of playing it. Like, I know they played it like PAX and a couple of other gaming things a couple of times. I don't know if any of that's still... if they've still got that going for them or not.
Well, if not, they could always just go steampunk and, you know, there's a whole other convention market for them to jump
on. Don't do that. I know Freeze Pop and any other bands out there listening, I know times are hard. I know, you know, there's no money out there for any labels. Don't go the steampunk, you know, circuit.
With no offense to anybody who might be in a steampunk band.
No, with full offense to anybody who's in a steampunk band.
All right.
They're pretty much uniformly terrible.
All right.
Anyway. But yeah, you know, you don't. I'm not really sure how much love this record got within kind of the general synth pop world or amongst kind of people outside of geeky circles or whatever. But it's a really, really good record and one that I've kind of really kept in my back pocket for a long while and really enjoyed.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, it's certainly something that I'll check out now after we've had this conversation. But I guess my issue with Freeze Pop was always that I found them a little on the nose. Like, they're cute and fun, but there's a point where cute and fun just sort of, like, the rubber hits the road, and I'm like, all right, give me something else. Yeah. What else can you do?
Yeah.
And, you know, far be it for me to complain about artists that are two-dimensional. You know, I love lots of artists who have, like, a limited range of things that they can do, and I'm totally okay with that in a lot of cases. But sometimes I find it when a band is kind of twee, especially in synth music, it drives me absolutely up the wall because I just feel like it's such an easy thing to get because you can just sort of do like, oh, like here's a childlike synth kind of thing. And even though I know that, you know, from a technical standpoint, a lot of things go into writing and recording and programming and everything else, it's so almost easy to just go that kind of cute Biss. Remember Biss from the 90s?
Biss.
And that like whole... Yeah. Sort of twee Scottish pop synth thing.
I love twee Scottish pop. For the record, I have a lot of Sarah records. I have the Wakes whole discography. I like the Field Mice. I love the Shop Assistants. I could do an entire podcast just about my love for
let's not
Scottish twee.
let's absolutely not do that thing that you said. but yeah, I mean, if you say this is the record where their songwriting is really at the fore and it's a little less cute and a little more. I hesitate to say substantial because that's such a loaded term.
Yeah.
But if there's a little more going on behind the scenes there, then certainly it's something I'll be keen to check out. And perhaps we should do that right now. What's this track called?
I think we should maybe play Doppelganger, which is one of the songs that I was mentioning about the kind of running into your twin at the club. Which, you know, again, it's kind of it's a cutesy sort of concept, but I feel like the actual songwriting and, you know, arrangements and everything on it kind of. Yeah, bring a bit more to the table than they have maybe in the past. So yeah, let's.
All right, Freeze Pop Doppelganger from 2010's Imaginary Friends.
I was out with a friend. no accident. There is no denial. I kinda wish I thought of it first. 'Cause she looks like me, she looks just like me. Why don't you see? She dances like me, dances just like me.
That was a Freeze Pop, Doppelganger. He said as though they had actually sat and listened to the entire thing instead of editing it together in Ableton, which is how we've been doing this.
We listened to it before the recording. But
yeah, it's a nice song. I like it a lot. I'll check out that whole record.
Yeah.
So we talked about the Mr. Kitty record that we really enjoyed, and we talked about Freeze Pop. So that's kind of something that's very current and something from a couple of years back. And so now it's time to talk about something that's upcoming. In fact, several things that are upcoming.
It's going to be a backloaded year.
Every year seems to be this way, kind of. I mean, I already actually sort of sat down. We do a thing on the blog every year, if you're not a regular reader, where we sort of do our top 25 releases of the year and then some honorary mentions and various other things. And it's almost, it was at the point last year where we almost considered turning into like a top 30 or a top 40 or something like that, because we had so many records we wanted to talk about. But, you know, this year's going to be especially hard because there's been so much good stuff already. All the records that we talked about, the synth poppy records that we talked about, there's been a couple of really great like electro industrial records. We've already started really like hard debating where things are going to fall in the top five
a huge part of our conversation with each other back and forth is just randomly texting each other at work, just like whatever deserves to be in the top 10 or this is moving, you know, just random, you know, assertions of strength as an album that we were maybe like, yeah, it's okay or whatever, like kind of starts to build some steam with us or whatever, and we just kind of want to start petitioning for its place in the year-end standings.
Yeah, and also make sure that if there's one record that one of us has listened to and reviewed for the blog, the other person has actually taken the time to listen to it, because there's been a couple of frustrating times in the past where one of us has been like, I can't believe you didn't listen to this. Why are we having this debate when you don't even know what I'm talking about? And you would probably agree with me if you'd taken the 45 minutes out of your day on the bus to listen to this stupid record. Those are always contentious conversations, and we start them very, you know, early on in the year, at least insofar as trying to figure out what we think is really great and keep those in mind so that they're fresh. And I'm happy to say that in as much as, you know, we've only done it a couple of times so far, we've never, like, forgotten about a record entirely. And
no.
Then had to go back and be like, oh crap, this should have been in the top 10!
Yeah, there's been records that, like, you know, skirted in, like, that were literally released in, like, the last week of the year.
Yeah, the DSX record from last year broke into the top 25.
And we got that just in, just snuck in.
Yeah,
like, it was, like,
just snuck in.
Dehan released that on, like, God, it was like December
like
20th or something,
like that.
Like, dude, everyone had already like left for their parents' house for Christmas or whatever, but we still found a spot for it. But with all of that talk about what's come so far, there's a pretty heavy line of big hitting albums, or what we anticipate will be big hitting albums coming down the pipeline right now. So we just kind of wanted to quickly run down some of those and talk about them.
All right, so you're going to hear us talk a lot about this, so we'll keep this relatively brief right now, but the Youth Code LP, the self-titled LP, is going to be coming out on September 3rd. If you're not familiar with them, you should go research them right now, because they're kind of a really big deal right now. We wrote this editorial that actually got a crazy amount of traction for us, just talking about the fact that they've sort of gotten a lot of, I hesitate to say mainstream, but a lot of press attention
outside of
like us
industrial.
And like the two other industrial blogs. Props to our friends at Coma, props to our friends at Brutal Resonance, but it's kind of remarkable when something gets talked about by anybody other than like the three of us and like the two or three other sort of industrial EBM exist.
It's not necessarily, well, It's remarkable to us. I imagine it's not remarkable to people from, you know, kind of from outside of, you know, deep scene head type, you know, people, the sort of people who write, who do podcasts about this sort of music, I guess.
Yeah.
It probably seems totally natural for people who write for Pitchfork or whatever to be like, oh, EBM's coming back in. Okay. I mean, you know, I imagine that's kind of...
Yeah. See, this is the conversation I was hoping to avoid getting
into. Yeah, we don't
need Youth Code, they're fantastic. They're from Los Angeles. The record's coming out September 3rd. You'll hear us talk a lot about it. We could go on about it for hours. So
you've probably already heard us talk a lot about it on the blog.
Yes. So we'll get to talking about that later. It's coming out the same day as the new Nine Inch Nails, which, although I am reluctant to spend a huge amount of our time talking about, I know we're going to have to discuss at least somewhat. We kind of did this thing when we first started where we were like, we want to exclude talking about bands and records that are already getting a lot of press elsewhere, because... Yeah. What's the point? But I feel like we have a lot to say about Nine Inch Nails, and I really want to hear what this new Nine Inch Nails record is going to sound like. I haven't been totally blown away by the two singles that have been released so far.
I still haven't heard the second one. Yeah. I've been derelict in my duties.
Well, as I was describing to you earlier, it sounds a lot like a lot of the stuff Trent has been writing lately. Mm. Like, it's got that super heavy bass line on the verse, and then a big chorus, and then, you know, it goes back to the verse, but this time the super heavy bass line has kind of like an atonal, like, you know, rickety piano thing over it. Like, I feel like I've heard them all, but all of his records sound so nice. Like, even the How to Destroy Angels stuff, which I wasn't super fussy about, I thought sounded beautiful in terms of its production, and it just sounds really well put together and nice. Like, you can't take anything away from that guy on that.
And no, you're always going to get top-notch production, at least at that level from it. But we probably won't spend a huge amount of time talking on it for the reasons you said. I mean, the Swans record, for example, last year, a lot of people were like, why wasn't the Swans record in your... And it definitely could have been. That was a fucking amazing record that we listened to.
Yeah, the Light Asylum record, too.
The Swans and the Light Asylum would probably be the two big ones from last year where, like, we listened to them all the time. We went to the tours for those shows. We love both of those bands absolutely to death, but we didn't really feel as though us throwing in our two cents would really add much
to the conversation.
So, but we'll do something about the Nails.
Yeah, New Covenant.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that one I'm very keen to hear. Mm-hmm. You and I both like Covenant a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the stuff that Daniel Meyer brought to the group when he was in Covenant. I thought that his, the sort of thing that he does really well fit in really well with Joachim sort of stepping back a little bit and sort of them becoming the sort of like elder statesman of that sort of style. Like, they still have this very rich, very European, very majestic feel to their stuff.
Covenant, yeah.
They're just Covenant. And, you know, if you've been around the scene for a little while and you remember Future Pop, they've never put out a record that I felt truly disappointed by. There's ones I like better than others, you know.
But they all sound like Covenant. We might get to this in a later podcast, but in our whole, like, transposition of, like, you know, the big bands of kind of, you know, millennial EBM and synth pop, our whole transposition of those bands over to the big four of thrash metal, Covenant are definitely Slayer, in the sense that within 3 seconds into a Covenant or a Slayer song, you know what band it is. That template never really changes. If you haven't seen it, there's an adorable video of Eskil skiing in anticipation of some festival that they were playing at in Europe, and he's like sending a little we will see you at this festival message while skiing at some chalet up in, like, I don't even think it's Sweden.
I think he refers to it as his chalet, which is amazing.
Point being, it's adorable. We'll maybe like post it in.
He's cross country skiing.
Yeah. But
it's very Swedish.
It's so good. So there's the Covenant on deck, which we'll definitely be talking about.
Speaking of Daniel Meyer, Architect will have a new record out, which we're crazy psyched for.
Yeah.
I think originally, like, closer to the beginning of the year, there was some talk about there being yet another How Job record coming out, and we were sort of like, oh my god, I can't believe they'd be following it up so quickly with something else. But because we enjoyed their last album, even though we had a really hard time writing about it, because I don't know why, it seemed really impenetrable at the time, although I think I have a good grasp on it now. It looks like that's probably not going to happen. Dehan seems to think that there won't be a full-length DSX record, But yes, Daniel will be putting out a full-length Architect record.
In like two weeks, you're saying?
It's coming out, I think it's coming out in early September. Right. I could be mistaken on that, though. We'll look it up. But yeah, I mean, he sort of released two teaser videos that had this really beautiful, interesting-sounding music on it.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked to a few people who've heard it. Like, we were speaking with Rayal from Coma Duster, who apparently did some work on it, did some vocals for it. I think it was vocals?
Yeah, he did vocals.
Yeah, and passed it back and forth a little bit, and who's heard it and says that it's a really remarkable, great record. I just find the idea of Architect, which is Daniel Myers, I guess up till this point, mostly instrumental project, putting out, like, a vocal record, kind of an interesting switch, and it sort of made us wonder, because he had announced that Radioactivists project that he was going to be involved with one of the guys from Rotter's End.
And Frank Spinath.
Yeah, and Frank Spinath from Seabound and Edge of Dawn and someone, Ghost and Rider.
And someone else whose name...
Whose name eludes us.
Consume, Adapt, Create, the last... Architect record was absolutely murderous. I say this as I'm a diehard Daniel Myers fanboy and everything, but this was head and shoulders above all of the previous Architect releases, so it's expectations are very high on this one. What else have we got in the docket there?
Ivarden Sphere is going to have a new record out in November.
Mm-hmm.
I know that from talking to Scott from Ivarden Sphere that this is one where Jan from Isoloscope and Jamie from ESA, who have been sort of live members and contributors for a little while, have come in and have actually done like some songwriting and some heavy production, some other stuff on it.
Jamie's got a vocal turn on it.
Jamie's got a couple of vocal turns on it, from my understanding. So, you know, it's one where their personalities and Scott's personality are sort of all melded together into one big Ivarden Sphere
soup. It should be something metallic, given, you know, Scott's day job. It should be like a fusion attempt. Welded plate mail. I don't know anything about metal work.
But yeah, there's that, and then there's the Ohm record that's coming up, maybe in a month and a half or so.
Ohm being Chris Peterson, formerly of FLA and Delirium, currently a member of Unit 187, does a lot of production work. Vancouver, right? Vancouver fella.
Yeah.
Buddy to the blog, friend of the blog.
Lives down the road from the HQ, actually.
Yeah. And our friend Craig Huxtable of Landscape Body Machine, who are sort of a Vancouver industrial institution of sorts, even though he lives in Victoria on the island.
He's long term. He's Van City for life. He's got a lifetime pass.
Yeah.
So they've got a collaborative album that should be out relatively soon. We've heard some snippets from that. It's all very interesting. We'll probably be maybe sitting down and chatting with them about that.
Yeah, it's coming out from the folks on Artifact Records,
yeah.
Who are also putting out a Cat Rapes Dog record, which I am super interested to hear.
That's going to be interesting, what a Cat Rapes Dog record sounds like in 2013.
Yeah, and especially because it's like the metal lineup of Cat Rapes Dog, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, who I'm not wild about.
There was some pull quote that like compared them to Rob Zombie.
That's awful and wrong.
It's
they weren't bad, but certainly compared to their sort of classic EBM sound, I wasn't a big fan of it. But yeah, I'm very, very keen to hear what they sound like now.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there's going to be an Aesthetic Perfection record, so we get to hear whether or not his sort of move towards a more pop sound pays off for him.
Poppy talk.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens with that. Will his fans hate it? Will we hate it? Will everybody love it? I don't know. I'm keen to hear it. I've been following that band for quite some time.
Yeah, definitely. That was I would say that, in a sense, almost like seeing Daniel... play the first Aesthetic Perfection gig that happened in Vancouver was kind of one of the first things that I don't know if it's spurned us to like start one of our first blogs, but it was kind of, you know, the, you know, kind of like, oh, stuff is happening, there are new bands coming out, we should be talking about this and writing about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what Daniel's been up to.
Daniel Graves of Aesthetic Perfection, just to differentiate from Daniel Meyer, who we've already talked about. And a Henrik de la Cour record.
Yay.
I know there's going to be other stuff that we're going to have forgotten to have talked about that we're going to immediately, once we're done, go like, oh, crap, we were going to mention, you know, this band or that band, but whatever. I'm pretty deep in on beer at this point, so, and we're almost at an hour of time.
We seriously planned for this to be like half an hour, and we just don't shut up, as our actual, you know, real-life friends know, but...
Yeah. So, yeah, Henrik Delacour record. Henrik Delacour actually was in a very well-known, I guess, Swedish band with one of the guys from Kite.
Yeah, all those guys come from the same...
Come from the same scene, and he's also on Progress Production. His new record, Mandrills, is going to be coming out. A single just got released from it that I really dig. If you're not familiar with his style, he's almost like... Like, when Mr. Kitty grows up, he turns into Henrik Delacour, like, just sort of this aged, but still, like, very dignified
stately,
but still very emotional, gothic-y, synth-y fellow.
That video of, like, him all gothed out in makeup and then playing volleyball.
Beach volleyball was... on the beaches of Sweden, which, I didn't know Beach Sweden had nice beaches. But seriously, between that and the Spark video for Pop Complex,
yeah,
it looks like Sweden has some nice beaches.
Yeah.
So we should really get over there to check it out at some point. Take the Borkaboos with us.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. We got to wrap it there. I'm sure we've gone on way too long with this thing. So, Mr. Kitty, Freeze Pop, a quick rundown of some new records, forthcoming records that we're excited
Summer
about.
Summer of Synth Pop. We Summer talked about pop. That. Thanks very much for listening. We're not sure if this is going to be a bi-weekly feature, a monthly feature, depending on how response is to this one. So if you like this one, we're going to be posting it on the blog. We're going to hopefully get it up on iTunes if I can figure out how to do that. Other than that, let us know what you think. You can leave a comment on the blog at idieudie.com. You can also send us an email to contact@idieudie.com.
Or there's the Twitter. That's you know how the Twitter works. Yeah.
Yeah, with the at symbol.
@idie_udie. Yeah.
Yeah. And we should specify that it's UYOU, not UD. Because the amount of confusion that we've caused by sticking to IDUD as an abbreviation.
We should totally get like IDIEUDIE.com and just set that up as a redirect. We should buy that domain and set it up as a redirect.
We'll do that right now-ish. Just pour me more of this incredibly sour beer that we're drinking and we'll get right on it. Thanks very much for listening. You guys are great. We really appreciate your support. I know that we write a lot of gushy thank you posts on the blog. Like, every time we get even to the most minor milestone. Oh, it's been like 10 posts since the last time that we talked about,
It was intern Toby's birthday, and we're feeling all sentimental.
Exactly, yes. So, but thank you very much for listening. We hope to do a lot more of these over the course of the coming years. We hope to have some special guests and lots of other fun features.
Do some roundtables, whatever.
Yes.
We'll sort it out.
It's just the beginning. What did we decide we were going to finish off with?
I don't know if we did.
All right. Then let's go with Covenant track.
Sure.
All right.
All right. Covenant.
From
Covenant
the
is.
Forthcoming album. This is Last Dance. You've been listening to We Have a Technical... The I Die, You Die podcast, idieudie.com. Can't stop.
Won't stop.
Good night.
This is my why.
If you're not familiar with the group Kite, then you really have to become... Oh, fuck's sakes.